Episode 18, Ryan H. Turner.
Better than you were before. So if you're stuck in a fearful or if you're stuck in an angry place and there's somebody that isn't, that you can relate to, then follow their lead.
You're listening to the Taylor Fit Wellness Podcast, where we explore wellness topics from A to Z so that we can take an active approach to improving our quality of life. Okay, here we go. So I'm so excited, Ryan Turner, to have you on our show. Welcome.
Thank you.
I can't believe I haven't had you on sooner. I know you as my leader in many ways, and I've been inspired to see many of your comments on Facebook and to see your process and just to remember our history in drum corps. Some people may know about, some people may not know about, but I know you as my leader, and I think, oh, captain, my captain. Oh, my God.
Good morning, Franny. Is it okay to call you Franny? Because that's what I used to call you, you know, 30 years ago.
Totally. Totally.
When I used to give you a ride home.
I know. Right? Yes. It's A-okay to call me Franny. Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Franny. Good morning. And good morning to everybody out there.
I have been so inspired by you, Ryan, for many years and in many ways. I have seen you as my leader, my direct leader in when we were in the Velvet Knights Drum and Bugle Corps.
The Velvet Knights.
So I know you as my drum major. And I remember we had such a fun time. I've revered your leadership over the years, and especially, you know, when you were my drum major.
Yeah.
But I know that your career has spanned into many other branches, and I've seen so many things to be inspired by. But I would love it if you would tell us a little bit about yourself and our listeners could get to know a little bit about you.
Thank you. And I am familiar with your podcast, and so I'm sure that as we had discussed already, probably 99% of your listeners probably have no clue what a drum and bugle corps is and what Velvet Knights mean and all that other stuff. So if your listeners would allow me just to go back in time for a little bit, I am what you would consider to be the proverbial band nerd. I grew up in a musical family. I joined marching band in my freshman year of high school. I was following in my big brother's footsteps. And I joined my high school marching band, which was highly competitive here in Southern California. And that whole world we call the marching arts. And that's where marching bands and color guards and this thing called drum and bugle corps exist in this thing called the marching arts. Well, I started my career basically in 1980, if you will, as a freshman in high school, a freshman trombone player. And from there, I aspired to be a drum major. And for your listeners that don't know what a drum major is, he's the guy that stands out in front of the band with that big stick with the silver ball on the end and spins it around. Well, that's not only what a drum major does. A drum major is also a leader. And it was when I was a junior in high school, when I first got my assignment as the drum major of the Pasadena High School Marching Band, is when I was exposed to this thing called real leadership. I had no gurus. I had no John Maxwell books to read. I had nobody telling me what not to do or what to do. And I learned by trial by fire. But it was at that time in high school when I started to learn the aspects of leadership, about what it is to actually have interpersonal contact with people from a position of authority, where as a 16-year-old, I'm telling 18-year-olds what to do. And that means something, right?
It really does.
Well, from there, my career started to go. It started to kind of snowball. I became the drum major of Pasadena City College. I became the drum major of the official Tournament of Roses Honor Band. I was in the Rose Parade a few times. I then joined this funny, weird group in Anaheim called the Velvet Knights Drum and Bugle Corps.
I think the fact that it is a funny, weird group, the funniness, literally the funniness, this is something you don't really think of when you think of marching band, is
right.
Humor.
That's exactly right.
And craziness and zaniness. And the Bridgemen was a group like that in New Jersey, right?
Right.
And the Bayonne Bridgemen. And then also the Velvet Knights. So I think within the marching band community, I don't know, what would you call us, like the class clowns of marching band?
Well, DCI referred to us as the clown princes, so yes.
Oh, the clown princes. That's kind of endearing. I like that. The zaniness was really fun.
So for your listeners, in the marching band world, a drum and bugle corps is kind of like a marching band on steroids. It's a group that's limited by rules to a number of people. It's all brass, it's all drums, and it's all color guard. There are no woodwinds. It's kind of an American phenomenon. It started way, way, way back in the 20s and 30s, but then it became this competitive thing, and now it's it's out of control. It's just this really incredible thing where you go to a football stadium and watch a production on the football field. The stage is not like a Broadway stage. The stage is 100 yards and it's 50 yards away. And they put these groups put on these productions for 7 to 9 minutes and are just amazing. And Franny and I were part of a group called the Velvet Knights. And the Velvet Knights, well, actually, let me back up really quickly for your listeners, just to put it into perspective. The drum and bugle corps world came out of the military. So everything had a military bearing for many, 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 many years. And all drum corps had this style of military, you know, cadet uniforms and, you know, holding their horns and you're just being very regimented. Well, the Velvet Knights came along and said, nah, we're not going to do that. And about 1982, they said, we're going to have a Southern California vibe. So instead of wearing the military type uniform, we're going to go ahead and put on khakis and a Hawaiian shirt and a straw hat and red Vans. And we're going to go out and do kind of a funny show. And that's what evolved. And then I joined the Velvet Knights in 1985. I'm just trying to paint a picture for your listeners because if I keep going too far into memories, they'll go, oh, okay, he's boring me. But it's about leadership.
Yeah, I know. Right? I mean, this whole thing about going down memory lane a little bit, like I think that I have a pictures of me in like a snorkel and goggles swim fins and a Hawaiian shirt on a football field. And what's that all about, you know, or with a huge blow up like zebra swim toy, you know, like, and there was even a shark involved, right?
Remember shark involved, the shark? Right. Or I play James Bond, you know, it's just all of these things.
Best James Bond ever, I have to say. There are many James Bonds. You were the best, Ryan.
Thank you. But that's where I became the drum major of this drum and bugle corps. And we were one of the top 12 drum and bugle corps in the world. And that was an honor of in and of itself. But Franny and I marched together and I was her drum major for 2 years. And it was within that world where I was the conductor. I didn't stand in front of a group and spin a baton. I actually stood up on a podium and conducted a field show. So I was kind of like a symphony conductor, but my symphony moved around at really high rates of speed on a stage that was 100 yards wide. My point being is that through these processes of being a drum major, I learned a great deal about leadership. And what was even more important and what's even more applicable to this podcast is I learned what not to do. If I can fast forward really fast to about 10 years ago, I've been extremely involved over the years in the marching arts. I do about everything that there is to do in the marching arts. There's a vast community. It's a big universe, but it's a really niche kind of universe. And so I've been a drill designer. I write for band directors all across the country. I design professional shows.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of interject, drill is like the patterns on the field.
I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. That's exactly right.
The intricate patterns, and much more intricate, I think, than I think anybody can imagine. And at fast pace, you know, you could have the drum line in a row. You could have the color guard marching through them and making these really intricate designs.
And that's a second part of the business that I really started to actually start right after I got out of high school in 84. I started writing for bands. And to date now, I have over 250 writing credits over the last 35 years for bands literally all over the country.
Oh,
so it's been really...
The drill design.
For drill design only, just for
what
that part.
What a smart thing to do right out of high school. That's amazing. How ambitious.
I didn't know what I was doing, but I figured I liked it. And it really feels good to be able to put dots on paper and tell people where to go and create these productions. Much like I just grew up watching and I want to do that. So,
oh my gosh.
Anyway, fast forward to 10 years ago, because I want to keep it applicable to leadership. About 10 years ago, there's a very popular drum and bugle corps here in Southern California named the Pacific Crest Drum and Bugle Corps. As a matter of fact, they started in 1993 and I helped them get going. And I was on their board of directors and I wrote drill for them. Yeah. But 10 years ago, they started this thing called a drum major camp. And out of the blue, they called me and they said, would you like to come down and do a 1-hour presentation on leadership for this drum major camp? And I said, sure. What do you want me to talk about? And they said, just relate what they can do for leadership. Well, if you think about it, ladies and gentlemen, you can't talk about leadership for 1 hour. It's impossible, because leadership is this vast, incredible topic that has so many different different legs and different tenets and different theories and what have you. So I went down there and did my best. I had this little Xerox piece of paper and I came up with this idea based on David Letterman's show. He always did the top 10 list. So the top 10 things you always wanted to know about being a leader.
Perfect.
I thought that would be kind of catchy. And so I did this 1 hour presentation, handed out the Xerox thing to about 40 high school kids sitting in a band room down in San Diego at this drum major camp. Well, about 2 weeks later, one of those drum majors went back to their high school and handed that piece of paper to their director and said, hey, this guy was pretty good. And that band director called me and said, hey, can you come in and talk to my student leaders about those things, but just change the Xerox piece of paper to the top 10 things you always wanted to know about being a student leader? And I said, sure. I literally had no idea what I was doing, but I had experience. I knew what I was talking about. But I had no plan. There was no business plan. I didn't sit down with, you know, a coach and say, I have this 10-year idea. I would like to do this dynamics
of leadership. You lived it and then you taught it.
And That's exactly right.
Your presence, your awareness, you know, again, like a leader is a leader and has certain qualities that they, you know, I think probably in your top 10 list you were teaching, but it came from your experience.
Yes, it came directly from experience. And so I did this presentation, took 2 hours. I had like 15 section leaders and drum major, you know, of this one particular band out in Palos Verdes of all places. Well, somebody heard that I did that and then they called me and said, hey, you can't do that for that band. You got to come over and do it for my band. And so I said, okay, went and did it for that band. So over the course of time, over the last 10 years, I got a bug. I went, something's missing out in the world today. Because when I sat down with these kids, I noticed two things. And this is really interesting, Franny. And this is I'm not overstating this. Number one, I noticed the kids were really hungry. They were hungry for information about what to do. What do you do when somebody says no to when you say, can you please go do something? What do you do if your director says, I want to do this, and you don't agree with your director? What do you do as a leader?
Oh my God.
What do you do when you see somebody that's sitting by themselves and not having any friends, and you're a true leader? Noticed all of this stuff, and I was just talking about it organically, right? It just came to me, and these kids were writing down furiously what to do.
Oh my God.
The second thing I found, directors don't know what to do. And I'm not bagging on band directors, but when they go to college, they're not learning how to be a leader. They're learning how to be a band director. And even then, being a band director nowadays is hardly about teaching music anymore. It's about dealing with parents. It's about fundraising. It's about managing the classroom.
Oh my God, it's so much.
Right. So then my business side of me said, I can do something with this. I can provide a service to band directors and hit a higher, I don't want to be like melodramatic. I have a mission.
Yeah.
And it really started, I am not kidding, and I'm feeling it right now.
Yeah.
I felt a burn inside of me,
an
absolute need to get out in front of kids with a very important message. And the message is, in order to be a true leader, you have to figure out what makes you, you, and how to be a leader. Not how to say ban 10 hut, not how to do, you know, rah-rah motivation, but to actually talk about potential. Talk about relationships. Talk about what makes a leader. And then ask them, what do they already have? What's in their tool belt? Because all kids have attributes. All kids have something. They just never been asked.
Yeah.
So that's how I start my seminars. I always sit down and I talk to you. I say, what do you have? And each person has to stand up and talk to me and talk to the group. I get them up and I get them talking. Wow. And it's a very, very powerful thing. Over the course of the last 10 years, not only did my business completely take off on me, but I developed a 30-page workbook with the help of a coach, an actual leadership coach, that helped me to take my message and then put it into modules.
Okay.
And so there's this logical kind of linear progression as I do my 4-hour seminar with kids.
Yeah.
And it takes them on a journey, if you will, because that's kind of like a popular catchphrase nowadays. I take them on a journey of figuring out who they are and then figuring out what to do. And it's, I love it. It is, wow. I am so on fire about leadership for high school kids. It's unbelievable. And this business grew legs, like I told you before. And then all of a sudden people say, hey, can you come in and talk to my company? Can you come in and talk to my group that has nothing to do with marching band? And COVID came.
Okay.
And I know I'm probably jumping ahead, but COVID came and it put my business on pause. And it, and it caused me to kind of stand back and just kind of calm down for a little bit, because my business was, and it only, and I don't know if I even said this before, Franny, my business is really central between the months of May and September, because that's when a band director says, I have now selected my new leadership team for the school year, which starts in September. I need you to come in and coach them and lead them into, you know, band camps and what have you.
So
everything is on pause, and now it's caused me to stand back and go to my leadership books, go to my John Maxwell books. I have a myriad of leadership books. People have so many theories and ideas, and I just, I'm a human sponge. Even at the age of 54, I never stop learning. And I absorb stuff, and then I do my famous chew. I just chew on things.
I kind of chew on it for a little while, right?
You're right. And then it comes out. And so what I'm planning on doing, because of this pause, COVID has been a disaster in one way.
Yeah.
But there's been very, very, really huge positive benefits for me personally, because it's allowed me to stop, think, and then let's come up with something new. Let's come up with something brand new for 2021. And so that's what I'm chewing on right now. A new workbook, a new idea, the name of my business, I kind of threw it out there, but it's called Dynamics of Leadership.
That's
it's kind of a play on words, because dynamics also means something in music, but it also means something outside of music. So there's dynamics of music and dynamics of life. So I kind of mixed it in, but Dynamics of Leadership, or DOL for short.
Yeah.
And that's where I am right now.
That's so amazing. I mean, this really hits home for me. My oldest is actually in track and cross country and co-captain. And so it hits home for me. So every once in a while I ask, well, what does that mean, being co-captain? And I'm not sure I'm getting a clear response. You know, I'm reminded of watching, I think it was a soccer camp that we went to once, and there was the coach that was teaching the skills, but they also had younger kids. Maybe they were older of the group, but they were leading like an exercise, like an across the floor exercise, and they would just take it upon themselves and do it and go. And I didn't see this in other groups. So that's why I'm asking my teenager, well, what do you do with, you know, your co-captaining? What does that mean? Like, what do you do? I think when you're put in that position, you can do it in a lot of different ways. You can, like you said, you can look for the people that are like in the corner. You can notice what's happening. Sounds like a lot of awareness that's important there.
Yes, it is. A lot of awareness, a lot of being open and to the idea of listening. I talk about exactly how to listen.
Let's talk about that for a little while.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
As I talk over you, I'm sorry.
No, and that's actually something I even talk about the art of listening to somebody, especially when somebody comes to you one-on-one and maybe wants to complain or wants to say, I have a concern, or I'm sad, or I need help. You know, how do you treat that person one-on-one as a recognized leader of your organization? What do you do?
Yeah. What do you do?
Right. And as I told you before, everything that I talk to a high school student about is absolutely applicable to when they graduate and go into real life.
Yeah.
And I always talk about that in my seminars. I talk about the fact that everything that you're going to learn today, kids, is absolutely applicable. And had I known that when I was in high school myself, I would have taken it more seriously. So don't do what I did. Do better.
Take it seriously now. You know, we had a brief conversation before we started recording, and you had mentioned that, you know, the profound effect of leadership, and that the people that you're working with now as a teenager, when you are in your 50s and you're attending events, the profound effect that the relationships you make when you're younger are going to have in your life as you continue, and who will be, you know, speaking at your family events.
Can I tell that story?
Yeah, let's have you tell that story.
I think it's kind of important. One of the things that I try to teach kids about is the impact that you can have on somebody that follows you as a student leader. I don't care if you're a section leader, a drum major, a captain of a color guard. It doesn't matter what your position is. If you're recognized as a leader for an organization, or in this sense, we're talking about a competitive marching band. That's my world that I work in. Then you have the profound potential of affecting somebody's very life. It's not just standing at attention, learning how to march, play your horn, go stand over there, follow my direction. It's about actually taking the core concept of leadership, which is always wanting to get people to be better than they were before. That's what leadership is about. That's what you want to be. You don't want to rule over people. You want to help people. You want to stand almost behind them and push rather than stand in front and say, follow me, you know?
Oh, wow.
So from that concept, I had a section leader in 1980. 1980, how many years ago was that? That's 40 years ago. 40 years ago, almost to the day.
Wow.
He called me on the phone. And he said, hey, you're a new freshman. I want you to come down to this sectional at the band room. And I was so excited. Finally, I get to go play. And from that moment, this section leader, his name is Bryant Duffy. He became my big brother.
He wasn't
just the guy that taught me how to play trombone and taught me how to march and yelled at me when I did stupid stuff. But he actually befriended me. He made an impact on my life. And we stayed friends for 40 years.
Wow.
For 40 years. Now think about that. He had a profound effect on my life to the point that when my father passed away about 10 years ago, he came to my dad's funeral and he spoke at my dad's funeral. Now think about that just for a second.
Yeah.
He was just a section leader. He just was in a band. It was marching band. It's not that important. But what was important was what he meant to me. And where we went as two people. We went on different paths in life, but we never lost the connection. And I think that's really important. I think what kids need to know is that leadership goes way, way, way beyond just marching band, which is the world that I live in.
Yeah.
It's about affecting people's lives. And I think he did for me.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that story. That's so profound. It just hits me in my heart.
Well, take you and I, for instance. I mean, you were in color guard. I had very little contact with the color guard other than just being in front of you. But you and I were friends. I gave you a ride home a few times. I mean, we were always friendly to each other. But here we are in 2020.
Yeah.
And you're asking me to be on your podcast.
Yeah. I'm very excited. You know, I've been so inspired by our connection on Facebook. You know, I've seen your post for me because I'm in the fitness world.
Yes.
I'm really interested when I see fitness. And not only that, I want to stay motivated for myself. I'm not always as motivated as I should be, even doing what I do. And I've seen your posts. And that's been an interest to me because you're always so positive.
Thank you.
I see great progress. And you know, should we talk about the Hulk a little bit?
Sure.
So as I'm looking right now, I see the background. You have a poster of the Hulk in the background. And it's endearing. Tell us a little bit about the Hulk.
Sure. And it's all Facebook driven. Just to put it into perspective, I love Facebook. I'm on it every day. I think it's a great tool. I think if it's used correctly, and I can tell you a story about how I used it correctly yesterday specifically, actually got me crying, and it has to do with the Velvet Knights. I'll tell that story in a bit.
Okay, yeah.
So I've been on Facebook ever since it came on. I think it was 2008 is when I first joined. And I use it primarily as my journal.
Yeah.
Really? I journal. I like to journal. But I use Facebook as kind of my platform. I don't use it for politics usually. About maybe every so often I'll get ranty about something. But that's so rare. And in today's contentious society and how polarized we are, it doesn't do me any good to get into that. And I really try my best not to.
Yeah.
So what I do use Facebook for has been to stay connected with great people like yourself, my friends and family all over the country, or all over the world, actually.
Yeah.
But I have used it within the last 10 years as a tool of accountability.
Yes,
and there's a story that goes with this. It's fitness related for sure.
Yeah.
In 2009, in December of 2009, actually it was Christmas night, I had a Christmas dinner and my big brother had come over and took a picture of me. I was sitting on the end of a couch. It's a very famous picture. I put it on Facebook every so often to remind people of where I was.
Okay.
It was a very famous picture of me sitting on a couch, and in my hand, I have a pint of Haagen-Dazs ice cream and I have a spoon, and I'm feeding my then one-year-old.
Okay.
A little helping of Haagen-Dazs, but I also weighed 300 pounds.
Okay.
And you can clearly see that I was not in shape. A couple of days later, he sent me an email.
Yeah.
And in the subject line of the email, he said, dude, ... And then I opened up and there's the picture. And underneath it, he goes, ... You're fat. Now, when you have a sibling and you have sibling rivalry, and he sends you an email that says, you're fat, that gets you a little riled up.
Yeah, but I can imagine.
But he wasn't wrong. He was right. I was fat. I was not healthy. I was lazy, not happy. And I tell this story so often that I use the term, literally, I snapped. And it wasn't a bad snap. It was a good snap. But I did get mad. I got mad at me. There was nobody else to get mad at. I had let myself go. I was a fast food junkie. I obviously liked my ice cream.
Okay.
And so I restarted my membership at 24-Hour Fitness, and it wasn't a New Year's resolution. It was, I have to do something because I'm going to probably not live very long if I keep going this way.
Okay.
I got on a treadmill. I don't know what day it was. I think it was like the first week of January. I got on a treadmill, and I went 15 minutes at 3 miles an hour, and I thought I was going to die.
Okay.
And that's where I started, Franny. And I promised myself, I wrote a goal.
Yeah.
And this is the secret to goal writing, or goal setting, I should say. You have to write your goal down.
We have to
and
write
at least
it down.
I knew that much, but I was extremely motivated.
Yeah.
And I wrote a simple goal. And this is all I wrote. I wrote it on a piece of paper, put it on a mirror, in my bathroom mirror.
Yeah.
I said, by December 31st, 2010, I will weigh 225 pounds. And I will fit into size 36 pants. At the time I wrote that, I weighed 300 pounds. I wore 46-inch pants, and they were snug. I was not happy. I was completely out of shape.
Okay.
So that's what started it, Franny. And that's why I use Facebook as my accountability tool, because I'm always out there, and people know me, and people like to joke with me and give me a hard time. And that's great. I love it. I love all that stuff. I love interacting with people. But I knew that if I started documenting my journey and then I stopped using reverse psychology, if they saw me stopping, people would give me crap. And I hate that.
Yeah.
I don't like being embarrassed. And so, I mean, seriously embarrassed. I mean, joking is one thing, but if people are like saying, hey, you suck, you're back doing your old stuff again, I would die. So that was a huge motivator for me. And guess what? This is amazing. You're going to love this. So about 4 months into this journey, so that puts me into about March and April, I get a message from a former Blue Devil. Blue Devils, for your listeners, is one of the best drum and bugle corps in the world.
Yeah.
And he's a friend of mine. And he sent me a message. And he said, hey, I see you're working out. You're doing a great job. It's very cool. You're losing weight. Love it. Why don't you join me and let's do a half marathon? Now think about this, Franny. Just 4 months before, I weighed 300 pounds and I was sitting on the couch eating Haagen-Dazs ice cream. And here's this guy calling me out by message saying, join me for a half marathon. And I typed back to him. I said, no, I can't do that. I'm not ready. And he typed back to me the words that completely make me crazy. He said, well, what are you? He said, what are you, chicken? No, no, I'm not chicken. And so I started training on a treadmill to do a half marathon. So 6 months into this, I did the Fontana half marathon. I did a half marathon in 2 hours and 47 minutes. And I only know that time because because I didn't know what was right or wrong about it. And I know I walked the last 5 miles because I was going to die.
Okay.
But I had a goal already set for myself. By December 31st, I was going to weigh 225 pounds. But then here's this guy calling me out saying, just come do it. Just do, you don't even have to run the whole way. And I took a chance. I got totally out of my comfort zone and said, let's do it.
What
and
a great motivator. Wow.
Yeah, I did it.
I have no reference with regard to the times. How does that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just remember that time, and he seemed to think it was pretty good for a first timer out.
That's amazing.
So the other part of this amazing transformation story is that the power of goal setting is that your brain, the brain is designed to operate on goals.
Yes.
That's how it is. If you, especially if you write it down and reinforce it and read it all the time.
Okay.
Guess what? I reached my goal by October 15th, 2010.
Before scheduled.
Way before schedule. I weighed 225 pounds and I put on 36-inch pants in a Walmart for the first time in a dressing room, and I yelled, woohoo!
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so amazing. From there, and so what you pick up on over the last 10 years of this is my up and down, my challenges and my successes with fitness, because it hasn't been all rosy.
Yeah.
It hasn't been consistent because I'm a human being, just like you are.
Yeah.
We have our good days and we have our bad. And so over the course of time, it's been a journey.
Yeah.
I'll use that to coin that phrase again. But in the recent months, because of COVID, I think it's pretty honest of me to say that this has been a rough year for everybody, but for me especially. I had a rough time from January until about July. I was really not happy. Just everything was wrong.
Okay.
But as you saw on a recent post, where I was trying to put a positive spin on everything, my business is completely disintegrated. Now, thankfully, I have a career that has nothing to do with the marching arts, so I'm very, very blessed and grateful for that. And that's a whole different world that I live in.
Yeah.
But for my passion, for the love that I have for the marching arts, for kids, for what I do, I was completely destroyed, if you will, by COVID.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers went down to zero, right? That's
everything went down to zero. I went from success to literally nothing.
I'll tell you how that's helped me. Like when I saw that post that you put up, because I mean, I'm grateful because I think it's very easy to put up what we want to be positive, but there's also the other side of the coin. If there is literally the business numbers went down to zero, I think you're not alone. My business numbers went down to zero. I had X number of private clients, and at the moment, I have zero, literally.
Yeah.
And we're trying to pivot and do every other kind of possible thing. I have now two podcasts. I have a YouTube channel. I have, you know, a newsletter. My website is up. I'm working, you know, continuing to work and try to pivot. Not quite there yet, but to know that things can go to zero and it's almost like scorched earth, and then what can grow from there?
Right. And one of the things that has been of a concern to me is that dynamics of leadership, as I have evolved it over the last 10 years, is designed for a live audience.
Yes.
And I didn't think that it would ever translate to a Zoom meeting like this. And a band director finally kind of called me out a couple of weeks ago and said, please just talk to my kids. And I talked to the entire band via Zoom for 45 minutes early one morning 2 weeks ago. And as far as I know, it was a pretty positive experience. It was
brand new
for me to try to get my message across
in
a very short amount of time using just a video camera like you and I are on right now and a microphone. But
that's
it worked.
Amazing.
And so it gave me hope that in case that 2021 is problematic, just like 2020 is, that maybe I can develop something to be online, because I just, this whole thing crushed me so much that I didn't have the wherewithal nor the motivation, and I didn't think it would work anyway. So I just said, okay, I'm just going to put our business on hold.
Pause. That's the big pause button.
Big
it's like 2020
button.
Is like the big pause button. But you know what's amazing is, Ryan, I can't wait to see your online leadership information. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I could just sitting here, it's like I could see it in my mind's eye. And we still do need to move on, even though everything is like a little bit twilight zone, I like to kind of refer it to it. And, you know, now is now. And I'm trying to inspire my kids, like, you know, yes, everything's different. Yes, we're doing online school. So the kids are home, you know, they're not attending in-person class. And, you know, so it's easy to just kind of be in dismay and things aren't as we would like them to be. But what does this make possible? You know, there's other benefits. And
it has caused here in my household. I have three kids. I have a 19-year-old daughter, a 16-year-old son, and a 12-year-old son.
Yeah.
And it has caused us to have to rethink about how we do things. And I'm blessed with three great kids. I love them dearly. And they have all adapted very well. The 12-year-old had probably, quote, the most problems, but now he's excelling. I can't ask for anything more from my kids. They're both straight A students. My daughter is doing junior college and working via, you know, she's doing all of her classes online. And
yeah.
She's a choir music education major. So there's a whole element to her major that's completely missing, which is live performance, live music lessons, live singing. And she's suffered, quote unquote, but then she's adapted and has made the best of it. So she has set up Stairs, her own little studio, to be able to do online voice lessons so that she's able to do that. My wife has a very successful piano teaching business was completely decimated, but now she's adapted and now she does FaceTime piano lessons as well as live. I mean, some kids do come in and we disinfect and do all the COVID precautions, but for those that don't feel comfortable with that, she's able to do it online and she's having great success with it. So yes, COVID has been, it caused us to just completely tumble. But once we stopped tumbling, we had to stand up just like you did, brush ourselves off and say, okay, now what? And so you created something, my wife created something, my kids have adapted, and now I'm adapting as well.
That's amazing. You're reminding me of this scene from the movie The Princess Bride, where
one of my favorite.
Isn't it awesome?
Oh my
god. It's actually the name of my second podcast, As You Wish. And it's what the one of the main characters is calling out as he's tumbling. Do you remember that? It's an epic tumble down a really big long hill. And it's just like, I'm just imagining this tumble in my mind's eye from the Princess Bride movie where he's just tumbling down the hill, and at the same time he's yelling to Robin Wright Penn, who's at the top of the hill, as you wish. But that kind of a tumble, that's like a COVID kind of a tumble, I have to say. It's like this time frame has just been like, whoa.
Yes, you know, like, totally.
And so to find our bearings is a process, and I'm grateful to hear what amazing transformations with singing lessons online and with piano lessons online. And it's very exciting. Very exciting to see that we need to move on and continue as we can. It's amazing.
And that's really the essence of the human spirit anyway, is that we are designed to adapt. We are designed to make sure that we can to push on, to survive, if you will, even. So, and it has been a huge impact, a big struggle for people. And in my world, in the marching arts world, I have seen friends really suffering, but they have also adapted. I've seen some great successes out there as well.
Can I just bring into this for a moment? I am at the moment, I'm also attending school. I'm pursuing an occupational therapy degree. And at the moment, I'm taking an introduction to neuroscience class, which I'm like trying to wrap my mind around literally. But I was struck by something that I found very interesting that had to do with the brain and this kind of primal instinct that happens that is meant for survival. Right. And what it referred to was the emotions. And two of the main emotions, one was fear and one was anger. And they were both sort of meant to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in this time of COVID, I'm imagining that those two emotions, you know, in some way it kind of makes me feel a little bit more like okay with the fact that I've been in a lot of fear and I see other people in a lot of anger, because those are those primal emotions that come up. And I think in this time frame where we need to be protected. The fear keeps you safe because it sort of pulls you into maybe like a safe zone, if you will. And the anger keeps you safe because in the primal kind of way, if you are threatened by, you know, a lion or something, if you, you get big and yell, you know, that might keep you safe. So those two primal things. Have you seen in your process these two, fear and anger, come up? Does that ring a bell in any way, like with what you've seen in kind of coming through to the other side of this process?
For me personally?
For you or Kofi in general, either way, like how do you see fear and anger being a part of this recovery process, or how have we gotten over it to get to a place where we are rebuilding?
I think in the world of fear, which has been a major part of this pandemic and how it has affected all of society, has created this moment where we have to really think about our personal well-being and the well-being of others. And so through the guidelines that we've been given, wearing masks, disinfecting, washing your hands, staying 6 feet away, the common accepted way of kind of doing life, now the fear is being replaced by adapting to that lifestyle, if you will. But it was very fearful. A lot of people really, and as directly has affected me. I've had family that have COVID that were in bad shape. I have a friend who really, literally died multiple times and now is recovering.
Oh my gosh.
And COVID was the major concern.
Wow.
So there's this real tangible fear that if I get this virus, that I'm going to get really sick.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's the anger part. And I've seen that anger part. It's angry at the world. It's angry at other people. It's angry at the disease itself or the virus. It's angry at our government. It's anger. Anger at the fact that we have to adapt. Yeah. And that has been part of my personal challenge as well. So it's out there. It's up to us as people to figure out what is the positive. And it's not Pollyanna, pie in the sky positivity, you know, the power of positive thinking, although there is a lot to that. It's about real life, about, look, we are in a world of hurt wherever you are in your life. Are you going to just rely on anger or rely on fear to get through it? Or are you going to find a solution?
Yeah.
And that's
and this
where,
is maybe where leadership comes in. Like with regard to leadership, how would you say if you are in a leadership position and you're seeing, you know, let's talk about just like within the family, like you have your kids, you know, or we can think of it within terms of other people that you're working with. As far as leadership is concerned, like how would you deal with like fear and anger if you wanted to help someone?
Well, one of the main things is to understand that one of the main concepts of leadership is to lead by example. And what I try to teach kids in my leadership is to go one step further than just lead by example. I ask them to lead by a good example, because you can lead by a bad example. And that negative leading is very apparent, especially with high school kids, but it's in all phases of life. You can see that in the corporate world, or you can see this anywhere that you work. You can see bad leaders leading by bad example.
Okay.
So if we were to go back to this concept of anger and fear, if that's how you want to lead your life and you're a leader, then you're going to be inspiring others to follow your lead.
Wow.
Now, if you are a leader and you are leading by a great example, you have found the positive, you have adapted, you are moving on, but you see other people around you that are angry and fearful, the one thing that I teach as an attribute or a really positive sign of leadership is being relatable. So if I've already been angry, if I've already been fearful, but I worked through it and I see somebody still stuck back there with that, then you relate to them that way and say, look at what I've done. I have been where you are.
Yeah.
I can relate. Now let's go.
Okay. I love that. Now let's go. I love that. I think that the three things you said, find the positive, that you can and adapt and then move on.
And move on.
And move on.
You and I had a common instructor.
I know who you're going to say.
By the name of Greg Clark.
Yes, Greg Clark. And I want to say, whoosh.
Whoosh.
That's an inside joke, but we can share.
No one knows what that means, but you and I do, yes. So, and Greg Clark was a huge believer in the concept, and it never hit me. I was too young to fully appreciate it, and here I am 54 years old, and I love the man, and I barely talk to him. But he has been the source of so much inspiration, especially the last 10 years of doing my leadership journey.
Amazing.
He taught us that concept that yesterday was yesterday, today is today. He always preached that.
Yes.
And he always preached the concept of being better than you were yesterday.
Yeah.
And that's how I started doing my physical fitness. Because I logged what I did and I looked at what I did before and I went, okay, well, I did 15 minutes at 3 miles an hour on the treadmill on my first day. The next day I did 16 minutes.
Beautiful.
That's a great Clarkism.
It's such a
basic concept, but people forget all about that. Be better than you were before.
Yeah.
So if you're stuck in a fearful or if you're stuck in an angry place and there's somebody that isn't, that you can relate to, then follow their lead.
And if
you're that leader that sees that person, then go out and reach out to them and say, I have been in your shoes. Come on, let's go.
I'm reminded of a story that Greg Clark told. And it was a story about, I think, when he was a teenager and his dad told him to like clean the bathroom and he didn't want to. And he just, you know, crossed his arms and he like wasn't going to do it. And what his dad did, I think, is an example of this idea of to be an example. What his dad did was he took the cleaning rag, took the cleaner, and he went in there and he was cleaning it. He cleaned it himself, but with a smile on his face, you know, singing while he wiped down the mirror. And he just had like the best time, like singing and dancing and cleaning the bathroom, you know, and that was leading by example.
Leading by a great example.
Right. I'm going to just try to remember to say it that way. Leading by a great example.
Qualify the example. That was something that came to me just a few years ago, because we always talk about leading by example, but the opposite can happen, and it does more often than not.
Right. So, and probably subconsciously, right?
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
And even the best leaders are going to have the bad days. Even the best leaders are going to get angry or discouraged or whatever. Yeah. So it's always important to remember a very famous bit of advice that my great father gave to me back when I first became a drum major in 1982. He said, son, someone is always watching. I mean, that cuts it right to the quick.
It really does. Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a motivation to do your best.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if we want to circle back to this idea of listening.
Oh, okay.
Like we kind of talked about like listening as one of the skills as a leader. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I teach in my seminar is the art of listening and how to listen, the physical look about what you do, as well as the intent of why you're listening.
Oh, that's probably really big, right?
Right. And because so many times as a leader, we want to make sure, or the inexperienced leader will want to make sure that they're heard. Yeah. They want to yell louder. They want to be followed or have their instructions, commands, directions to be followed. So they're the giver and the listeners are the followers. Well, I ask them to reverse it and think about how powerful it is to be able to listen to people, to be able to not talk, to not yell, and to take a moment and hear what's going on around them. And then I talk about the one-on-one, about the person that's going to come up to them inevitably, because you are identified as a leader of this organization. They're going to come up and say, I've got a problem, or I have a solution, or I have a complaint, or I am scared, or I'm sad. So what are you going to do physically to listen to a person? I teach them how to make eye contact. I teach them how to stay off their phone. I teach them body language. And I don't go deep because they're kids. I don't want to, you know, do a whole seminar on just that. But I talk about little cues about what are you physically doing, and to be mindful about it. If somebody comes up to you one-on-one, are you going to be looking at your phone and going, oh yeah, uh-huh, and looking like you're completely multitasking and not really paying attention? Or are you going to stand there and make eye contact? I talk about how to repeat back what you've heard, especially if somebody's really angry. If somebody comes up and says, blah, 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 I tell them, repeat back to them exactly what they said and say it in a non-confrontational way. And just start with, okay, just let's pause for a second. I just want to make sure I hear you correctly. Are you saying, and then repeat back exactly what they say? Because more times than not, when somebody's really riled up and emotional and angry and they want to complain about something and then you repeat back what they said, they'll say, well, that's not really what I meant. Okay. And then they go, and then they diffuse.
It takes it down a notch.
It takes it down a level. God. That's exactly right.
The art of diffusing.
Right. Oh. And you know, kids, they get really emotional, you know, and they may make things bigger than they actually are. And if you're a really good leader and you can listen to those complaints and not get emotionally involved and just step back for a second and not take it personal and then repeat back what they said, you can diffuse a situation and bring it down a level and then be able to get to a solution, because that's really what you want to do.
There.
You want to solve an issue, or you want to help a person. You want to be able to be present. Yeah. And so many kids are so tuned in. I mean, adults are too, for crying out loud. I had a boss that would look at his phone right in the middle of a conversation. I'm like, come on, I'm trying to talk to you.
Yeah. So that's huge.
So
in this day
being
age.
Present, being present is so powerful for a person to be listened to be heard. So I actively teach that.
Oh my God, that's such an amazing skill that I think that now more than ever is important. So important.
So think about how that would work, not just as a high school student leader, but as an adult, as a boss, as a supervisor, as a husband, as a wife, as a boyfriend, girlfriend, as a member of a religious organization that you may be in a position where people have to come to you and talk to you. Mm-hmm. How are you listening? You know, I mean, that's a concept I think that a lot of people just forget about today. And society allows you to have a phone in your hand.
Not only that, but society, like, because of, I know that technology has been so amazing in so many ways, but it also has made everything faster. This 24-hour nonstop cycle that's possible because of everything being on all the time.
Right.
And people just feel like they're never caught up. So I think that the overwhelm that ends up putting someone's face in their phone, it's either overwhelm or I want to say avoidance or escapism.
Yes.
You're either overwhelmed and you're like, I got to check this.
Right.
I got to catch this. I got to, you know, or you're avoiding maybe a difficult situation. And that's something that can just be a tool to pull you away. So definitely facing things head on, being face to face with people and giving them your undivided attention. That's kind of an amazing, amazing
skill.
Right. So awesome. Oh gosh. I feel like there's so many things we can talk about, Ryan. I'm looking forward to having you on again and we can talk about more.
I would love to.
There's so much possible. I wonder if we had to think of a couple of tips that our listeners could take with them and apply immediately, what are one or two things with regard to leadership, maybe, or maybe something we talked about during the conversation that could be a quick win for our listeners?
This may not be completely applicable to what we talked about, but I want to talk about something that has really made the difference to me. And it's almost cliche in a way, because it's been out there a lot. I think probably somebody like Oprah Winfrey probably was the one that really got people thinking this way. But it's about gratitude. And it's a real simple concept, but it's so hard to do. And the reason why it's hard to do is because it's easier to fall into the trap and to get mired, if you will, within the negativity of the situation.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because we're wired that way. Maybe I'm more wired that way. I don't know. I have to actively try to be positive. I have to actively be in a state of gratitude. I have to think about those things.
Okay.
Because if I don't, then for whatever reason, I can tumble and down that hill, if you will. And so I have said that from January until about July has been it's been a rough year for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I did spiral down. I did go that route. And COVID certainly was a huge, huge impact upon me.
Yeah.
But I had to figure it out. And I knew I could, it was almost like an out of body experience. I could see where I was and I wasn't where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that somebody can walk away from this is to just take stock for a second, step back. I always talk about step back, step out, step away, and just become real for a second and just say, what do you have to be grateful for? And it could be something so simple as these glasses that I'm wearing allows me to see 2020.
Yeah.
The fact that I can breathe, the fact that I'm healthy. And then it just starts to snowball. I can start to go really fast. I got great kids. I've got an office. I've got people that refer to me as the Hulk. It's fun. I got friends. I'm surrounded by people that love me. I've got, and all of a sudden all of this other crap that I was mired in all of a sudden becomes really not so important, or at least manageable.
Yeah.
So if somebody can walk away from this and just take stock of where you are right now, I know things are rough out there, but it's not as rough as you think it is.
Okay.
If you can just take a look at your own self.
So gratitude. That's awesome. I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So cool. I wonder if our listeners wanted to find a way to find you, what is the best way they can find you?
People can find me usually on Facebook. That's where I live most of the time. I'm a daily poster there. I like to check in when I'm doing my workouts. I usually have something inspirational to say, or if not, I try to be funny. That usually doesn't go over very well. I don't know.
It works for me. It's inspiring.
I have an open Facebook. I keep it open to the world, so I don't have my privacy settings set to like friends only. So if you went to, and you have to remember, it's Ryan H. Turner. There's only one on Facebook, but if you just do Ryan Turner, there's like 600. So
okay.
It has to have the middle initial. Or I'm on Instagram too, but just not as much. I'm still figuring that part out. So it's just Ryan H. Turner. There's no dots, dashes, at Ryan H. Turner. And then I have a website, but it's on hold right now. I'm revamping everything. That's the business side of things. I don't really rely on it. I rely on word of mouth advertising. So I don't really promote it, but it is ryanhturner.com.
Beautiful. Excellent. Good, good, good. I know there are many layers to what's possible in our conversations. And, I think that that's one of the things that like I've been inspired by as well. So tell us the career side, like what is that you do?
Well, I went to college initially because I really wanted to be a band director, but it also at the same time, I had an interest in law enforcement. I thought I also wanted to be a cop. So I was either going to be a cop or a band director, and one of them has to carry a gun and usually should be the director, but... But I got interested in law enforcement, and I worked at Pasadena City College in their campus police department, and I fell into dispatching, actually being on the radio and answering phones at their little dispatch center. And I thought, wow, this is an interesting little thing that I really enjoyed. I liked being on the radio. I always say any job with a microphone, because I'm a professional announcer and voiceover person too, as well. So I liked that kind of aspect. And then I moved to Orange County. I joined Knott's Berry Farms security team as a security officer because I still had an interest in law enforcement. I was still going to college as a band director possibility. And I fell into their dispatch center just by accident. Their dispatch center was huge. They had lots of things to do. And I liked it a lot. I really did. And then by accident, I wasn't planning on this. I actually met somebody that worked for the Orange County Fire Department in their dispatch center.
Yes.
And she invited me to come down and do what they call a sit-along. That means I get to sit with an actual 911 dispatcher, listen in on calls, and watch them do their job. I sat down there for 2 hours, and I was absolutely hooked. Wow. I said, this is great. I can do this for sure. So I auditioned with 300 other people and got one of 10 positions at Orange County Fire. And in 1994, started my career as a 911 dispatcher for the Orange County Fire Authority. We actually changed into the Orange County Fire Authority.
Yeah.
I spent then 26 years with them as a 911 dispatcher and worked my way up the ladder until I was second in command at the command center.
Yeah.
And then just a couple of months ago, I retired and joined the Ontario City Fire Department as the communications manager for their 911 center. And so completely outside of the world of music and marching and creativity, I am actually really in a solid career in the 911 world.
It's so amazing to me. You're the guy, like if someone is having an emergency, they don't yes. know what to do, you're the guy they pick up the phone. And when they pick up the phone to call 911, you're the guy on the other end.
I always say that I'm the guy that deals with people having the worst day of their life.
Yes. And I think that also you deal with the resolution of that.
Yes. One of the things that I've talked about is that I've birthed 3 babies over the last 26 years, and I'm not even a doctor. So.
So you were on the phone while the birth was happening?
I've given instructions about how to give birth. Yes.
Oh my gosh! Right.
I've done CPR over the phone. I've done the Heimlich maneuver over the phone.
You've talked people through all of those things. Oh my
yeah.
god!
Yeah, and it's the sad part of the job is I've had people die, but oh, I've also wow. had people. I've either help people give birth, or I saved a lady giving instructions of the Heimlich maneuver and actually got a commendation for that. So wow. yeah, it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm so grateful. And all of the people that have ever called and gotten you on the other end of the line, I think that definitely they got to be grateful too. And yep. Wow, it's amazing. So a leader, an organizer, helping people through things. Like I'm so grateful to be a part of share what you do with everybody.
Thank
and it's such an amazing thing. So yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So gosh, Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so excited we've been able to have this conversation. I look forward to possibly having you on the show again.
Please
in the
do.
Future.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you very much. And hopefully your listeners got something out of it.
I think so. I'm excited and I'm glad to have had you on the show.
Thanks
so much. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Cool. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Great. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Based on what we talked about, I made a download for you entitled 3 Ways to Begin a Gratitude Practice. You can find the link for it in the show notes and also on my website, www.taylorfitwellness.com, on the free stuff tab. I hope this tool is helpful for you. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.